We're on the record. I'm senior producer Melissa Gear in for Sheila Cast. Good morning. In honor of WYPR's Spring Pledge, we're offering up not one, but two Stoop Stories today. First, here's a Stoop Story by Rohaizad Suwaidi about pledging his love of country.
There's so many stories I can tell, but in thinking about wanting to tell my story, I think two themes. It's a story of love and sacrifice. I was born and raised in Singapore, in a Muslim family. All my life, though, I've always wanted to come to America. I had this intense love affair for America. I grew up learning everything I could about this country. I watched all the TV shows, and I learned about American culture from watching all these TV shows. American sitcom. Some of my favorites growing up were, you know, Good Times, The Jeffersons, Different Strokes, and The Golden Girls. I so much wanted to come to this country. My father sacrificed to get me here. I finally left Singapore to come to the United States. Well, sort of. I went to Hawaii. As soon as I stepped on American soil, I felt at home. I can't explain it. I just felt at home. Nothing felt strange or alien, maybe because of all these television shows that I watched. I eventually moved to the mainland, as Hawaiians call it, the mainland, USA. And I've lived in New Jersey. And finally, I moved to Baltimore. My first summer in Baltimore, 1995. I remember I opened the front door to go out, and it was like opening the door to a very hot oven. The hot air hit me, and it hit me, literally, almost like, you know, I grew up in Singapore, it's tropical, but never that kind of Baltimore heat. I was here on a student visa. I extended this student visa for as long as I could. Partly because I love living here, this is home, but also partly because I met my life partner, and we lived together until I had to graduate, and I went to grad school, and I took all the credits and more, and I graduated with extra credits, but my student visa ran out, and I didn't want to break any law, so I left the country. A couple months after I left the country, 9/11 happened. And my life partner was here in Baltimore. And I had just come out of the theater. I went to watch a ballet, I don't remember. And a friend said, hey, you know, go home, watch the news. Something just happened. I rushed home, I watched the images, and immediately I thought of him, like my partner, and I thought of my friends, and I thought, that's my country. That's my home. What's happening to my country? Since 9/11, I lived outside of this country, but I would come to visit every year for the next 15 years. I would come to visit on the pretext of, you know, going to a conference or whatever, but I would stay for as long as I could. And my partner would come and visit me wherever I was living. I had lived in many places. I worked as a university professor in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, Singapore, where I'm from. We even lived together in Micronesia, the Federated States of Micronesia, a group of islands in the middle of the Pacific, just so that we can be together. So the love and the sacrifice, right? It was hard. In July 2011, I was in this country, and we got married because we could. But immigration is a federal thing, and the federal government didn't recognize our marriage. It wasn't until a couple of years later, June 26, 2014, that they struck down DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act, and the federal government recognized our marriage. We started the process of applying for me to come into the country legally as his spouse. We collected this much you know, documents and documents, photographs, email, letters that we had sent, letters, snail mail, everything, photographs, submitted it. And we waited and waited. And then we went, you know, the next step and the next step. But it just seemed like forever. But finally, I got that interview at the American Embassy in Singapore, and I was like all prepared, you know, all those scenes from the movies, right? Like, they're gonna grill, they're gonna ask you, so what's his favorite, like, you know, thing in the fridge, right? I went, and they said, well, you know, your paperwork is great. We don't really have any questions for you. Do you have any questions for us? I was stumped because I expected to be grilled, right? So I got the green card, and I wanted to say, I wanted to end my story on the night of November 8th, 2016. It's been my ritual to watch the elections every 4 years, even when I wasn't living in this country. I was sitting in our living room in our house in Northeast Baltimore, and I was holding our son, who we're in the process of adopting. I was holding our son, Johan, sitting on the couch watching the news, and I didn't realize until, you know, that I was squeezing him tighter and tighter and tighter. When I realized it, but because I was in disbelief, I couldn't believe. And I thought, what's happening to my love story? What's happening to my love for this country? It's like being in love with a country that doesn't love you back. I couldn't believe it. I was like, all my life I wanted to be here, and now tonight, I'm not sure if I do. I'm not sure if this is what I want anymore. But I look down, and I have this boy who I've committed my life to. I'm going to take care of him. I'm going to provide for him. I'm going to protect him. And I'm going to stay here and resist and fight. I'm going to resist and fight and sacrifice for the love of my son, Johan, my life partner, Dan, and my love for this country. Thank you.
That was a Stoop story by Rohaizad Suwaidi about fierce love, sacrifice, and pledging his support for his adopted country. Welcome back to On the Record. I'm senior producer Melissa Geer in for Sheila Cast. Here's a Stoop story from Gretchen and Warren Hensel about why pledging your love can make all the difference in the world.
Well, our story begins in the fall of 1957. I was 15 years old, and I was entering my sophomore year in high school at Marymount High School in Cincinnati, Ohio. And that fall, our school had merged with a neighboring high school, Terrace Park.
That same summer, my dad was transferred from Louisville, Kentucky to Cincinnati, and we bought a house in Terrace Park. I was 14 and about to enter high school.
On the first day of school, I was walking through the hall, and I saw this beautiful, tall, blonde girl. And I asked one of my new friends from Terrace Park, I said, "Who is that?" And they said, "It's Gretchen Tiffany. She's new to the park, and she doesn't have a boyfriend." Well, I was so shy that all that fall, when I would see her in the halls, I would walk by and I would say hi and just keep walking. In January, I went to a party at a freshman girl's house in Terrace Park. And as I walked down the steps, I saw Gretchen on the other side of the room. And just like tonight, my heart was beating so fast you could see my shirt fluttering off my chest. I walked over and I introduced myself to Gretchen. And we started talking. And we danced a little bit, but we talked a lot. And then it was time for Gretchen to go home. And we walked home, and as I left her at her house, I gave her a little kiss. Well, when I got home, I had some of my friends at our house, and I had lipstick on my collar. They said, "Where did you get the lipstick on your collar?" Well, I turned about 8 shades of red, but I would keep that shirt, a pinstripe shirt, for the next 20 years until my first wife tore it up.
my memories of high school are a little hazier than Warren's. So it's really nice that we're together now because I put him in charge of my memories as well as his own. What I do remember is what I loved about him when I met him. His kindness, his big blue eyes, the fact that he was a super basketball player, and that he was my boyfriend. We went steady for most of the next year, and I still have the silver basketball he gave me.
I wasn't really that good a basketball player. We were together a lot for the next year, and when we weren't together, we would be on the telephone until Gretchen's mom would make us get off the phone. I'd really never met anybody, and I never would meet anybody like Gretchen.
Oh, we do a lot of crying. You should never, never trust a 14-year-old girl. We broke up in the spring of 1959, and my family moved to Connecticut.
Well, I would see Gretchen twice more. The last time was New Year's Eve, 1961. Now, in 1961, I had seen Breakfast at Tiffany's. She was a Tiffany. With Aunt Audrey Hepburn and George Peppard. So I decided I would wear the same outfit that George Peppard had worn in the movie. Black loafers, gray slacks, blue shirt, red and black striped tie, and a blue blazer. Well, I didn't impress Gretchen very much because I wouldn't see her again for 30 years. Now, fast forward to 1987. I ran into a friend that had just moved back to Cincinnati, and we had a mutual friend who was the alumni chairman of Connecticut College, which is where Gretchen had gone. So I called this lady and I asked for a phone number, and about a month later, she called with the phone number. Well, it took me about a month to get enough courage to call Gretchen.
I remember that I was walking out of the house. I was on my way to do some errands, and I heard the phone ring. And you know how you have that momentary thought about, will I stop and take this call? So I did. I picked up the phone and I heard Warren's voice saying, is this Gretchen Tiffany? And I said, yes, it is. And he said, this is Warren, Warren Hensel. Do you remember me? And I said, of course I do. Now, when he tells the story, he'll say that I said, Warren who? Which I never would have said. My mom was a stickler for manners.
Well, over the next several years, we would talk a couple times a year about what our families were doing and what was going on. Finally, in 1991, I asked Gretchen if I could come down to see her, and she agreed. So again, I put on my gray slacks and my blue blazer. This time, we had a great time.
I picked Warren up at the airport in Richmond, and this time it was my heart that was pounding. We drove to Williamsburg and had lunch at the Williamsburg Inn and talked like we always talked about our lives.
I'll finish. Gretchen also had some pictures of her kids when we were there, and she was showing me the pictures. I said, oh, your kids are so nice looking. What Gretchen didn't know is I had forgot my glasses, and I couldn't even see. After lunch, we walked out in the patio, and we sat and talked. And really, it was like we had not seen each other for about a month rather than 30 years.
So...
Then. So we. I'm sorry. She drove me back to the airport, and as I was getting ready to leave, I turned around, and I'd given her a kiss, and I was starting to walking toward the airport, and I turned around and I came back and I gave her another kiss, and I said, Gretchen, I may never see you again. Well, the next day I was playing golf at our club in an outing, and I had a hole in one, and I thought, you know, that has to be a great omen.
We wouldn't see each other for another 9 years. I flew to Cincinnati for New Year's Eve in 1999, and we were engaged the next year. We've been married for 11 years. And I just have to say, you don't know where life is going to take you, and it's the small things that can make all the difference. Just be there when the phone rings.
That was a Stoop story from Gretchen and Warren Hensel about persistence, timing, and pledging your heart to someone before it's too late.